We call this regular meeting of the Levanna County Board of Supervisors to order. Start with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go ahead and move to the County Administrator's Report. Mr. Nichols.
Here, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, just a few things to cover. Outside the Treasury and Commissioner Revenue's office, we've had some problems with the
Can the folks in the crowd hear us more accurately? Thumbs up across the board. We're getting a little bit of reverb up here, so I think that's what we're dealing with.
Anyway, we've had some problems with some ground outside the Treasury Commission Revenue's office because of the way the brick sidewalks have sunk down over the years. So Public Works staff went back and retrofitted and put some basic curbs in and did some maintenance around the area and did some mulching to keep the mud from running when the current rain down across the sidewalk. So it's always been an expensive solution to keep people from slipping and sliding off the sidewalk. Appreciate that. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Keith and Young Smith, and the Sheriff's Office are combining again this year to do this personal safety training on Saturday, August 17th. It's being announced all over the county, and I just want to mention here today, too, it's on the fan mail going out, and then the flyers around the county. But it was held here last year in the auxiliary gym. It was a really great event, and really attended that. A lot of women last year in the class. I hope a lot of the show again this year too. Good event for the community. I met with Superintendent Ayler yesterday, myself and other county administrators, to talk about their new inmate workforce project. Road work, road gangs is kind of the old term, but really just the inmate workforce that maybe could do a variety of things in the counties that are supported that fund the Central Virginia Regional Jail. That program actually begins in 2 weeks. The sheriff and I are meeting to talk about how to implement here to make sure that folks that we can get some work done that we need done, but it meets the spirit and the guidelines that the jail puts down too. So I've got a copy of their policies that the sheriff is meeting with them tomorrow night. But in 2 weeks, we're first on the list. We'll go two counties at a time. And every 3 weeks, we'll have another crew to be able to do things. So I was intending on starting it out with the sheriff's concurrence on Route 250 in Houston, from 15 back towards Albemarle County, all over here to the trash pickup. But there are many things we could do. One of the things that I might think would be useful is doing grounds maintenance at Columbia and Cunningham, while we still own those facilities, to keep the school staff there and mow the grass or things like that, or areas like those. Can't do regular school during session. Recently we have briefed you about the county internet service updates and upgrades that we needed. We're on the school system and we have to move off the school system. We were negotiating a CenturyLink. We have another alternative now that is actually a state contract with Comcast with a pretty significant savings, and you don't have to sign any 5-year agreements. It's just month to month off the contract. So we're looking hard at that now. We'll probably be going that route. It'll actually save money over the funds that we originally on, and cost savings mainly over what the other alternative would have been. But as soon as we can get that in place, we'll be switching over to that internet instead of the school's internet, because of the requirement to not use that the special internet service designed for schools and libraries and things like that. The fire rescue ordinance, and we got that written a while back. Rebriefed the Fire and Rescue Association with an updated idea on goals and direction, and the Fire and Rescue Association agrees with that, those goals and direction. But we still have to work out how to do that legal language to meet the requirements of the ordinance, but also meet the spirit and intent of what we plan to do here locally. So that was those discussions by the County Attorney's Office and the Fire and Rescue Association.
Steve, when you talk about these ordinances, that's still go through it.
want to do is you would ask for a fire and rescue ordinance. Our fire and rescue ordinance is really tough. There is no rescue in it. It's just fire alone. There's not much to it. And what you would ask for was an updated fire and rescue ordinance. It's a little more modern, improved fire and rescue. So the initial draft that we got from the county attorney's office, that was presented to the Fire and Rescue Association as a draft for us to begin the discussion. It created quite a stir. But the legal language in there is the problem. I don't know how to get over the hump of the legal language that's required in the ordinance versus what we really intend. The intention was to provide the Board of Supervisors with, provide the Fire and Rescue Services in our county with a emergency services coordinator to collaborate with them to help support the services and to provide the Board of Supervisors some authority to be able to take action if there are problems with fire and rescue services in the county. There is no way to do that in the current ordinance. The proposed ordinance is pretty strong in wording, not what I would have necessarily recommended or that you necessarily intended. We're just trying to figure out how to get from where we want to be versus the legal language that is required, and we just have to back on that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just elaborate on that a little bit, we don't have the kind of ordinance that we're talking about now. Our ordinance is much more limited. I won't say it's antiquated, but it's not as comprehensive as it ought to be. When we first drafted the ordinance, we were pretty sure that it was not going to be what it ultimately ended up what it would end up looking like, but we did it so that it would cover all the issues that we foresaw coming up. Ms. Wilkins has talked with the fire and rescue people, and she's gotten a lot of feedback. And I don't really think there's going to be a serious problem coming up with something that's acceptable to them and yet serves the county's needs too. It's just a question of some things really we don't really need to address, or certainly don't need to address the way we've done it in this draft. Then there's some massaging, but I don't think it's a really serious problem. So what we're doing is Ms. Hoffman in my office and Ms. Wilkins are going to get together and sort of put their heads together and see if we can come up with some specific ideas how to redraft this. So you should be seeing it pretty soon.
Are you building on the ordinance that you already have, or are you throwing that out and starting here?
No, the ordinances we already have will remain.
Okay, but you're strengthening it.
Well, they're really very limited, and as Mr. Nichols said, they really don't address anything except fire. They don't address the rescue situation. This one will address fire and rescue essentially interchangeably.
But
and it will address.
Will it be the one that you presented to us earlier?
I'm sorry?
The one you presented based on Albemarle, is that one going to be tossed out and we do our own?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
That's,
all right.
We drafted that. We drafted that as sort of here's one way to do it.
Okay.
And it's going to. We'll probably use that sort of as a form,
right.
But it's going to be. We'll probably have some sharp knives put on it.
Right.
Fair enough.
It'll look substantially different.
Yes. Thank you.
Very good.
Okay. Just a brief update. Mr. Payne and I met with our counterparts from Louisa. We talked about the possibility of agreement between our two counties to move the JRWA process forward. Ms. McGuff's meeting went very well. We'll get some documents back from the region within 2 to 3 weeks. We'll report with you for the discussion. The RRI, it's been such a big topic of discussion. It's at TJPDC for review, and pending their review of it, the work product, that's back to us. And then on the Aqua PPEA, we're just standing by waiting for receipt of another set of revised agreements. And then once those come in, we'll look at those with the staff and then legal review and then get be able to get the advertisement into the we had a review, and it did not get advertised. We had it advertised 2 consecutive weeks in advance. If you still want to do a 7 o'clock meeting, the next 7 o'clock meeting is September 18th, or you would have to either schedule or set up a separate additional meeting or whatever time you would prefer. Just you know what the schedule you want, so you can then get the advertisement out.
Mr. Van, I believe when we get the new agreement from Aqua Virginia at that rate, would you advise we go ahead and simply re-advertise that, or just advertise since we're not re-advertising anything?
No. Nope. My opinion has always been that the documents you had that we got there some time ago was what needs to be advertised. What then should happen is that Aqua has reacted to certain comments that the county has made, particularly things that I've asked for, and they're trying to address some of those things. I would suggest that the way it's handled is that the original document is what has to be advertised, I think, under the ordinance. But the new documents, it should be understood that the new documents are what would be acceptable to Aqua addressing these other issues. I told you before that the original documents were not acceptable to me legally, regardless of the numbers or the policy or whatever. They weren't acceptable to me legally. That's what we're trying to address right now. And I'll tell you that I did get a call from Aqua's attorney, I think it was Monday, and I was wondering where. He called me last week and said that they were going to, I'd asked him, I called him and asked him whether he was anticipating getting us revised drafts, and he said, yes, I'm intending to do that. He called me, I believe it was Monday, and said, I understand, I think, where your problems are based on our last conversation, and I'm going to try to get authority to address those things. Apparently he did, because I got a call yesterday, and he said I was going to try to get him to you today. I couldn't do it because I was in court and had hearings and stuff. And then I got a communication today from Mr. Parker saying that Mr. Satterwhite was tied up again in court, couldn't even call me today. I wouldn't get him today. And I told him it was too late anyway. I wouldn't be able to review him before today, but it really didn't matter.
Right.
As long as we got him before the hearing. So I understand that Mr. Satterwhite is going to try to get them by tomorrow, but again, I emphasized that's, you know, when I get them, I'll look at them, but if tomorrow or the next day or, you know, within a reasonable time will be soon enough. So they're trying to address those issues, and I think Mr. Satterwhite and I were essentially in agreement, and I think there was some, I don't know if it was miscommunication or what, but Mr. Satterwhite understands my concerns, and I think he's certainly able to address them. He's a very able attorney.
Fair enough. Okay, questions for the county administrator?
So it's going to be scheduled for September 18th?
I'd like to see the 18th, and you can defer the one that we had scheduled for the 18th.
I'm sorry.
We had one scheduled for
Walker's Ridge.
Walker's Ridge.
Oh, yes. The issue was the 18th. The Walker's Ridge public hearing was planned for the 18th. It hasn't been advertised yet, but it was planned for the 18th of September. But that's the only 7 p.m. meeting we have until October, again, unless you add one to the schedule.
I think we could defer that and address the water.
We could do the first meeting in October and have a 7 o'clock meeting as we were prepared to do today.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
First meeting in October, to do a 7 o'clock meeting specifically for a public hearing for Walker's Ridge.
Yeah, normally you would have a work session on that. We could just make it part of the regular meeting and carry it out to 7 o'clock, so you can have an early one and a late one, however you want.
I think between August 7th and first meeting in October, I think there'll be sufficient time to go ahead and conduct a work session on Walker's Ridge.
So you want to continue the Walker's Ridge public hearing for September 18th?
No. Walker's Ridge would be moved to the first meeting in October at a 7 o'clock meeting. And then Aqua Virginia would be September 18th, 7 p.m. Is that agreeable to the board?
It's fine.
Okay.
sorry, you're not going to be here.
That's right.
On the first meeting in October.
That's right. That's why I was talking about
the first meeting in October.
He'll be off his ridge. Yeah, he's not going to be here. Mr. Ohlenbrock is not going to be here for the first meeting in October. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So we'll do it in the second meeting in October then?
Right.
Second meeting in October?
Second meeting in October.
Would be the second meeting in October.
Okay, so the PPEA, September 7th, September 18th, 7 p.m. Walker Bridge, the 7 p.m. meeting in October, the second meeting.
Correct.
Correct. 7 p.m.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that you want to do the September 18th back here if it's available?
Yes.
If not, Central?
Yeah.
Central?
Yes.
Okay. And Walker Bridge, just in the courthouse?
We might need some room for it.
For the planning commission meetings, the most they've been is about 50 people, Mr. Chester.
Yeah.
About 50 people for the planning commission meetings when there was public hearing in the courthouse.
Let's plan on the courthouse for now, and then we'll see.
It was not an overflow crowd.
Let's plan on the courthouse for now, but obviously we've changed tax in the past, so obviously that would be appropriate.
Okay.
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 Any further questions for the county administrator at this point? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to the first round of public comment. Again, please remember to keep the comments directed to the board on topic and within 5 minutes. Is there anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing none.
I'm Dennis Holder, Kent Store. It's been an interesting week having to do with this PPEA and the water agreements and so on. We've seen about as many intrigues and double dealings and such in this week as you might see in the average week in the halls of Congress. Kind of amazing. I'm concerned about the ROI, and I know that a lot of you are too. It's completely inadequate. It fails on any number of counts. Some of those have been reported by our staff back to the Thomas Jefferson Planning District. Some have been discovered by David Harris and I guess passed along to our staff. And some are just sort of lying there wondering, people wonder why we haven't addressed, for example, the $1 million deposit that has to be put down in the contract that we've seen. It's not in that ROI. But the main problem with the ROI, as I see it, is the ridiculous growth projections that are included in the one that we've seen, thanks to Mr. Rothamel and his online publication. The projections that are in that ROI, in that spreadsheet, are completely unrealistic. I got an email yesterday from Mr. Cockrell at the Thomas Jefferson Planning District. And he told me those numbers, that is, the growth numbers that are in that ROI, were never meant to be working numbers. He said that those are placeholder numbers and that our staff was supposed to insert realistic estimates of what our growth actually should be and would be if we had water up there. But it isn't in the documents that we've seen. The placeholders, Mr. Cockrell tells me, have been well understood by this board and this staff to be nothing but that, to not be real working numbers, which means that when the so-called summary was released last week, you all knew that it was bogus. Now, why aren't those numbers in there? Mr. Cockrell says, well, staff is supposed to develop those numbers and put them in there, but they aren't there. That means either staff didn't do its work, or some of you put your political agendas ahead of the facts. I'm betting the fault did not lie with the staff. So what I'd like to see is a real spreadsheet with real projections developed with the documents, the data, and the tables that our planning staff uses to come up with these kinds of things. And let's see what would really happen at Walker's Ridge, Zion Crossroad. At very least, I'd like to kind of issue a challenge. It wasn't long ago at one of the endless meetings that the Planning Commission had to talk about Walker's Ridge, which, by the way, they did in wonderful detail. It's probably the most rigorously examined proposal ever put before this county. But at one of those meetings, Mr. Chesser said that he doubted that Walker's Ridge should be built where it's proposed in Palmyra, but he said it would be just fine at Zion Crossroads. Now, we know that Walker's Ridge is the kind of project that people are going to build at Zion Crossroads. As soon as they put water up there, the developers are going to flock in with housing developments, not business developments. So, what I'd like to see you do, at very least, is plug in the numbers from Walker's Ridge and let's see what happens to this ROI. That is, put in 120 residential units a year for the first 10 years, put in the 700 or so school kids that our staff has concluded Walker's Ridge would generate, change those numbers and give us good projections when you correct the mathematical errors in the model. Give us good projections of what the profitability or lack of profitability really would be at Zion Crossroads if we do this deal with Aqua Virginia. Show us a spreadsheet with those numbers in there. Show us 167,000 square feet of business added almost entirely at the end of the project. So we've got 120 houses a year for 10 years, and then at the end of that, we're going to get about 135,000 square feet of business. We'll already have about 30,000. Let's see the economic benefits. Let's see the economic benefits of water and sewer in the real world if we use these spreadsheets and this model that's been developed. I am ashamed that you all have put forth numbers that you know to be misleading, inaccurate, and apparently have done so deliberately. But I'd like to see real numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holder. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Holder. Come on down the stairs. Like I said, the reverb on this is bad, so I apologize.
My name is David Harris. I live at 49 Turkey Sag Trail. And I'm the one that did the analysis of the projections that were posted on Facebook. I support economic development at Zion's Crossroads. Absolutely, 100%. It's absolutely essential for this county. I support the idea of the Aqua Bill if the numbers work for us, 100%. What I can't support is what I've seen in the behavior of the board over the last few days. I can't support the berating of staff, the accusations against staff that are trying to do their job and, in fact, telling the truth about the errors that are in the proposal. I can't support posting premature numbers out that look good as a feeler when you've known for days that those numbers were inaccurate. And so it calls into question everything about the process. It certainly calls into question, as Mr. Holder just talked about, what those assumptions are. My analysis did not deal at all with the assumptions. All I did was look at the actual spreadsheet that was presented, which matched the document that that one of the supervisors posted to the Facebook page, and analyzed those to see if it worked. And then the idea was, once I made sure that it worked, I could play around with some estimates for growth projections and see how the ROI changed. The spreadsheet was leaked, I believe, late Thursday night. I looked at it a little bit at my lunch break on Friday, and then I really began looking at it in earnest Friday evening. By Friday night, I knew that there were millions of dollars of errors in the proposal, in the spreadsheet. And these are not errors in the assumptions, not this is what I think will happen. This is mathematical errors in the calculations. I worked off those projections, created my own spreadsheet replicating the work that the Thomas Jefferson Planning, whatever PDC stands for, did, and was able to quantify the results of those errors and how they impacted the bottom line. The two major errors that I found, first of all, the water connection fees, water and sewer connection fees that the county is supposed to charge. While the amounts, may or may not be correct, the number of connections each year suffered from a compounding error where the total number of connections to date less only the previous year's connections was multiplied by the rate to determine the revenue. The net impact of just that error on the ROI over the course of the 20 years ranged from $8 to over $9 million in terms of reducing the revenue that we would receive. The other error was the cost to the county, to what we would pay Aqua Virginia for water usage and for sewer, maintenance fee on the sewer, was understated to the tune of 1/365. It was, they did not multiply it by 365 days, the gallons per day number, so that we were showing a profit in excess of 1,000% or 1,000 times on the water and sewer usage fees, which is obviously not the profit margin. So on Saturday, I finalized those, and I did a worked up a write-up on Sunday, 2,500 words, explaining in great detail what those errors were, proving what the errors were, and also expressing concerns about some of the assumptions that were in there. On Sunday evening, I posted that to the folks on Savannah's Future Facebook page, as well as Savannah Now, and then I sent the write-up and the spreadsheet to Mr. Nichols for his use if he needed it. I'll make myself available for anything, any future analysis as new numbers come in for Aqua to help to do that. But the thing is, I didn't need to do anything I did because Mr. Nichols had already identified every one of those errors. And he had sent them to the TJPDC in advance, days in advance, if not weeks in advance, of when those numbers were released. In detail, with cells that were wrong. He didn't have the quantity. He hadn't carried it out to figure out what the effect was. But he knew what those numbers, he knew what the errors were. And those errors were ignored. And the fact that those errors existed was ignored. And numbers were put out that were known to be inaccurate because they looked good and supported their proposal. And again, that I just can't support.
Harris, anyone else wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the first round of public comment.
She raised her hand. Oh,
Elizabeth, I'm sorry. Come on.
Elizabeth Franklin, the Columbia District. I hereby request for citizens a copy of the staff analysis and findings on the ROI. We have had a totally dysfunctional week. We have had pieces of the ROI come out. Mr. Chesser released on Facebook a portion of the TJPDC ROI. We have had also released through unknown sources the assumptions part of the TJPDC ROI, as well as a spreadsheet that relates to the staff findings that was inscrutable to most citizens, but that showed that staff had been working on highlighting the errors that are in the TJPDC ROI. And so we've received three documents over the past week, actually less than a week. What we haven't received is the third and critical part of it, and that is what the staff has been working on over the past few months to analyze the TJPDC and get it into final form. Mr. Nichols has reported to the board and kept them updated that the staff was working on this, and it just defies reason why we decided to go to a public hearing, not just today, but earlier, without even having an ROI for the citizens to look at, without you even having an ROI. The whole purpose of an ROI, I own a business. The whole purpose of an ROI is to say, hey, this is a good business decision or it isn't. And that you would even go to a public hearing and expect people to comment on whether this is a good decision or not without having that, it's just, it defies reason. And it, once again, today, you have done the same thing. Here we go, rushing to risk with taxpayers' money to a public hearing on which the public doesn't even have the facts to comment. Thank goodness for people like Mr. Harris, who have done this incredible amount of work, to many other citizens who have analyzed the agreement, analyzed the bits and pieces of the ROI that have leaked out or been purposely put out, and tried to make sense of this. And millions of dollars have been identified. All kinds of other problems have been identified with the assumptions. And at this point, the average citizen has no idea what are we supposed to comment on when we go to the public hearing. I am requesting a copy of the staff's work as soon as possible so that we may see that and be prepared for this public hearing. I also have a question about what agreement. I've had a question before. I think Mr. Payne asked that, answered that question today. What agreement we're actually supposed to be commenting on? What version of what agreement we are supposed to comment on in the public hearing? I've been thinking about this over the last couple weeks. I thought, okay, when they run the ad, it says, come down to the county administrator's office and you can pick up a copy of the agreement, and that's what you'll be commenting on. That's what we're going to be deliberating on. Except, now that we know that the agreement is being noodled here and there in different versions, if I do that, and the ad had run, and I went down to the county administrator's office, would the version of the agreement be different than the second week? Or would it be the original version? And if we're supposed to comment on the original version, does that make any sense if there's a new version? I just think that we have put the cart before the horse, and there is a lot of this that we aren't looking at from the citizen standpoint, and certainly not from the taxpayer standpoint. We got a $20 million purchase riding on this. We have limited prime real estate at Zion Crossroads. We may have one good shot to do this. And we would plunge ahead with a decision based on all these unknowns. You know, an ROI, I first suggested an ROI to the board back in January of 2010 when the board was going to have a water retreat. And I was delighted when the board said, yes, we're going to do an ROI on the water plans. And you've done that. But you know, an ROI is supposed to be an unbiased, honest document. You're supposed to follow the facts wherever they lead. And I don't get the feeling that that's done here. And there are rumors that the facts have not come out because certain people don't want them to. I hope that's not the truth. But that really concerns me. I want our county to be known for smart decisions, not dumb decisions. And we don't look good right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Franklin. Anyone else wishing to address the board? No hands. Go ahead and close the first round of public comment. We have no topics for public hearing. We do have action matters, tab X, voluntary contributions plan. Mr. Nichols.
So we've done some updates on this since the last time we saw it. And I'm coming back now with a kind of a final policy, just an intro policy document on how this program runs. Mrs. Lundmer and I and Mrs. Horlocker have met and gone through this. I know Mrs. Lundmer has also met with supervisors as well as I have. I think this is what you're looking for, and I'll show you a quick briefing about first and some costs. Costs have been updated since the last time you saw it. You said those were preliminary costs on printing. And so here's what we have as the proposal. And Mrs. Lundberg, if you want to jump in any time, please jump up there when you've got time to go ahead. So as you know before, this was intended to allow options to directly support the program or a program area in the county by direct voluntary contributions, separate from any tax payments. This is not a tax, it's just a voluntary contribution program. We wanted to make it an easy way for people to donate, and then those donated funds would go directly to the program that would be supported. This would require the donated funds to be available for that designated agency or department. The Board of Supervisors would then have to appropriate that. I would propose that would be done twice a year, after the second January meeting and the second July meeting, because that way the tax bills have already got out. It's kind of a typical time to look at those. And then the receiving departments would identify which budget line those funds would go to. Voluntary tax contributions would be tax deductible, and that people should check with their tax advisor for their individual circumstances. The minimum contribution amount proposed is $10. It's the cost to process these things and to post them and pay to process checks and things like that. So both the Treasurer's Office, the Finance Director, and myself all recommend the $10 minimum. Any contributions less than $10 will be returned to the donor. If you're paying with your tax bill, you have to mail those in separately. A separate check is required for those things. They go to the record and correct the counts on the way the cross county system works. So that it's assigned to the correct designated organization. But then you can do this in a number of different ways. You can either come to the treasurer's office and do it by cash or check. You can do it online by personal check or by credit card. There is a convenience fee for that, for that website to use. And you can certainly mail a check into the treasurer's office at any time. This is what's revised from what you saw before on this screen. What I would do in the policy is to say that information explaining the program and contribution forms may be available through the following options. And we would just leave in personal property bills and in real estate bills not sent directly to a mortgage holder on the policy that way, identified in red there. Because we're not proposing to do all of that this first run, and I'll explain that in a second. So we just changed the language in that policy to May. Contributions would be to these six different areas that you saw before, the same six areas. And then, based on cost, if you wanted to do it to all real estate bills that go to a homeowner, if you wanted to do all personal property bills, the annual cost based on the new cost estimates is $2,800 a year. If you want to do it for this first run, just to the real estate holders that have their mortgage sent to their home, then the cost is about $450. That would be just for the October 5th event. And so, if you want to do it in the blue at the bottom, which is what we recommend, start with that. You would go on the website immediately. It would be available by paper handouts immediately in public meetings. It would be available on the school website immediately. Starting September 1st. And then you could see the effect on the mailings. And if you want to absorb the cost of that, then you can continue. There's a cost for an annual program of all the mailings, for a one-time mailing on the homeowner's bills. And then to do that, I'll come back to that in a second, this is what would be the timing of the website to be September 1st, treasurer's office September 1st, public meeting September 1st, and then if you wanted to do the mailings, it would be October 1st, if you want that October sometime there.
It's usually about the end of September.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you go out that first mailing because the forms are ready and you've already seen the forms before. So the question is, on this screen, which one do you want to select on? If you want to select that bottom one, there's your cost. If you want to select start the program and do it all, it's about $29.
Do you have anything? Mr. Albrook? Do you have anything to add? I met with the treasurer a couple days ago.
Yes.
And we had a long discussion on this, and as you can see, the number started out at $6,800.
$5,417.
And now we're at $28. Once again, it's...
And as Mr. Allenbach and I discussed, putting these in the... October billing and doing a trial run when the billing goes out, the cost of that insert will just be billed to my office, just like a regular bill run. Then after we see, January or say the first meeting in February, to actually see how much this has cost us and how much we've gotten on the return, then, come back together, meet, see if we want to continue this, in the May billing for the first half of 2014.
How much would that cost?
It's about, if we do 10,000 inserts into these billings, it's $469.50. Now, 10,000 is more than we're going to need, but that would give us additional to have at public meetings and,
On this screen, it shows 10,000 printing. But only 7,000 stuffing.
Right.
We do about 14,000 a year, so I took half of that. So
yeah.
Based on 7,000 stuffing to 10,000, we've had some to hand out. It's 448.
But I think by making sure that it's on the website, public meetings, flyers, whatever we can get, library or wherever there's, public, then that's an ample opportunity for every citizen to have the ability to make a voluntary donation.
Mr. Albrecht, is a budget of $400 and some odd change sufficient for you?
That's correct.
Significantly and less than $6,800.
Yes, and I want to thank the Treasurer's Office for working with us on that and getting down to real numbers, and I appreciate that.
And it may be less than this. This is, you know, I haven't gotten a final, you know, say, hey, you're still too high, so we're, you know, it could be less, but this is exactly what I got as a quote.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The original estimate from last week was 5417. It's come down to 2801.
So I think we've made a decision. We'll go with the 440 and readdress this in February.
Let's send them to the board.
I move to approve the Pavanna County Voluntary Contributions Policy effective September 1, 2013.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Allenbrock, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Moving on to tab YZ, EDA conduit bond for benefit of Region 10. Ms. Horlocker.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is very similar to something that we brought to you a couple months ago. The EDA has been asked again to use their conduit borrowing power. This time the beneficiary is the Region 10 CSB, and it's actually they're going to also use the Louisa IDA for part of this deal. And what they plan to do is refinance some of their debt that they currently have. And then they're also rehabbing their building on Preston in Charlottesville. So because the EDA is the Pavanna County EDA, again, this requires your approval so that they can be the conduit borrower for this bond.
Fair enough. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Board of Supervisors approve a resolution approving the issuance of the Economic Development Authority of Pavanna County, Virginia, of its tax-exempt revenue bond in an amount not to exceed $7 million for the benefit of Region 10 Community Service Board operating.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Allenbrock. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Move on to tab A, realign use portion of CIP school bus replacement funds. Ms. Keller.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have Mr. Winkler with me, Assistant Superintendent, primarily because he works extremely closely with transportation. We are in a unique position to request the restructuring of the use of a portion of the CIP funds that are allotted for bus purchasing. We have typically had 14 vehicles that transport special needs children on a regular basis. Three of those vehicles transport special needs children to out-of-county placements, two in Richmond, one in Charlottesville.
Five out-of-county, three
five.
To Charlottesville.
Sorry, three, that's why he's here too. Three to Richmond, and two in Charlottesville. By law, we're required to provide that transportation service for their individual education plan. We have currently right now one bus for special ed transportation. We are in the process of purchasing an additional bus. I will tell you in the long term, in terms of the future, we are whittling away at the use of cars for transporting children and would want to go forward with purchasing more buses. However, special ed bus cost about $82,000. So at this time, just because of the timing, the addition of a student to our roster, we transported this year using, we have three cars basically that are beyond repair. We have broken down on the side of Interstate 64. We've paid approximately $3,000 in towing, which I think is a total waste of funds, and would like to request that you give us permission to be creative at this point. We have, about $28,000. That it's not really carried over, but it exists in the CIP. With an additional $8,000 from the current allotment, we could purchase, looks like we could purchase three vehicles that are much newer to our fleet. I will let you know, because I think it would be a burning question, I would think it would be a justifiable burning question. We're updating our inventory of those vehicles. We'll update with our school board September to show what we have declared a surplus, where those vehicles have gone either to be used for parts or non-repair and have been hauled off for scrap metal, basically. But we're with the closing of two schools, we are also, I would think, in a position to really restructure how we use those vehicles, because we're not, we're still traveling the county to pick up the children, but there are two less drop-offs. And so that puts us in a position to restructure as well.
Excellent. Any questions to the board? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I approve the use of CIP school bus replacement fund to purchase three vehicles specifically for transport of Fluvanna County public school special needs children, approximately $36,000.
There's a second. Motion is made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Chesser. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing us to use the high school today. Presentations, moving on to tab B, library programs and funding. Ms. Hoffman.
Just a quick update. I haven't got final numbers yet, but circulation is final. We had a really active year with 228,000 and a little bit of circulation. So we're still circulating lots of books, although AV's catching up. And you'll notice for the first time this year, we had e-books for the whole year. So we circulated almost 4,000 e-books.
How do you circulate the e-books?
Check them out online. And they return automatically, so there's no fines.
I'm just a complete Luddite when it comes to that.
We thought it was
miscellaneous.
Miscellaneous would be we circulate puzzles
and
magazines.
Yeah.
You can check those out. Those are popular. We do about 50 puzzles a month.
Right.
And all of our puzzles have been donations, so it doesn't cost us anything. And
I tell you, my family has realized we can get videos there and we'll have to go to the Red Box.
Yeah,
and you don't have to turn them in for 2 weeks, so we give a donation. It's like it's discovering, hey, you all have good...
Your family's regular now.
So I looked at one other night. That's a great service.
Okay, so our collection grew by 6,500 items this year, and we deleted 2,500. So we're now at 67,000 items, which I looked back in, like, 2012, we had only, like, 50,000 items. So we're growing. We're adding them as fast as we can. We've added 1,192 borrowers this past year, and we now have 15,000 active users. There's some cards in there that aren't active, but that's fine. And we had over 14,000 internet users, which includes both our computer lab and our Wi-Fi users. And on any given day, we have between 10 and 20 Wi-Fi users, regulars. A lot of people, especially on Fridays, will come to the library and use Wi-Fi instead of driving to Richmond or Charlottesville to work. We've had great programs this year. We added a couple extra story times on Fridays, so we had over 1,700 people attend the story times on Fridays. And I'm always looking for guest readers. If anybody's interested in reading, it starts next Friday, and we're doing Bugs and Slugs, I think. And then we do Friday movies the first and third Friday of every month. We did Skyfall and the new Disney Brave movie, The Hunger Games, and lots of more movies. We do it at 2 o'clock and at 7 o'clock. We had almost 1,000 people just to Friday movies. And that doesn't include extra movies we run all summer. So we wrote a grant, and we got these really cool binocular telescopes that you can look through and see the craters on the moon. And I have really bad eyes, like I can't read that. But I can see the craters on the moon. And so we do Moonlight Madness every fall. And this year it's coming up Saturday, October 12th. We do a Howl at the Moon contest. We do crafts, and we have community members bring these huge telescopes and stuff that's fun. So if anybody's free. We had 34 people last year, and that was pretty good for a kickoff year. So. Summer reading is still going on. It's going on until Saturday, August 17th. We have over 800 kids at the kids' programs participating in the kids' reading program. And I've been keeping up to date on all the programs we've had. We have over 140 teens in the teen program, and I always think that's good because I know teens, they don't always like to do stuff. So. And the adult program, I haven't figured out yet, but I know that I have a huge box like this, and it's half full of entries, so I'm pretty excited about that. We have lots of reading going on. And we do have a couple of new things we just added. Credo Literati is, these are all online, and it's research. You can type in one search, and it'll give you books, magazines, newspapers, media clips, pictures, all of that just by typing in one search. And then it also offers certified teachers to participate with students online to assist with homework, and that's for writing and math, and I can always use Math Help. Math Help, I think that's a great addition. And they've had summer hours, and then once school starts, they'll do, I think it's like 4 to 7 every weekday to assist doing homework. And it's certified teachers, which is nice. Zinio is really cool. If you haven't looked, I'm a big food cooker, and I love to cook, and I'm always looking for recipes. And I went into Zinio, and I signed up, and I put the Food Network magazine on my reading list. And now every month it emails me and says, oh, July's issue is available. Click here, and you get the whole magazine. In color, you can print off recipes, and they offered the 50 top chosen magazines from Amazon, so, and that's through the state library. But I know that some people like economy stuff, so there's The Economist and Forbes and National Geographic and Discover, Country Living, so anything's there. Yoga, if anybody's into yoga. And then also new this year is One Click Digital, which is about 4,000 titles, and it's all the classic great reads in audiobook that you can just download and listen to on your computer, or you can download them to your little iPods and stuff like that, which I don't have. So. Okay, so we're doing really good. I just want to touch on the funding for the library. The state library requires us to have a local operating expenditure of at least 50% of the median statewide local operating expenditures per capita. That's a lot. But essentially, we're getting better every year, but we're still not quite meeting the state requirement. In 2010, we were at $770 per capita, which was the lowest funded per capita in the entire state of Virginia. And we've moved up a little bit every year, and it runs 2 years behind. So fiscal year 12, we were at, that's $936 per capita, and the 50% of the median that the state requires us to meet is $1033. So, Mr. Nichols is aware of this, and we've been working on it every budget year, and I just wanted you to be aware of it as well. A discussion of this came up, and I called the state to verify the numbers, and if you aren't meeting the requirement, the state usually makes you go through a whole waiver process. And I says, well, yeah, I was expecting it, but you never, and I didn't have to do one last year. And they said, oh, well, you fell through the hole. And I was like, oh, shoot. So now they know. So it might be coming up that we might have to fill out the waiver and do the waiver process. And the number that's used to determine that includes the number from the county, or the budget from the county, as well as common governmental, which is like utilities and maintenance workers, any repair that you've done for the library. And right now we do about 56,000 of that a year. And it includes all the money that we get from the Friends of the Library. So it's just not local government, but it's other things as well.
If we're not meeting that 50%, what about state funding?
They can pull it.
But they haven't done it yet.
Nope. Well, then, and they said we fell through the hole. They just missed us last year because there's so many big issues. So usually what happens is you have to go through the waiver process, and in that waiver process you have to set up a plan to meet it within 5 years. So
I thought we had a way to meet it, such as maybe we weren't including electricity and some other things that would move that up. Is that not true, or
not
where
true.
Are we on that?
We've included all of that now, and we're including about $56,000 worth of that just to get to where we are now.
So we have 5 years then?
Only if we have to go through the waiver process. I will say that since they run 2 years behind, that's fiscal year 12, and we're in fiscal year 14, and it's gone up a little bit each year from you guys to us. So we are getting better. We're getting closer.
Yeah. Well, hypothetically, we wouldn't have to go back to the Commonwealth, though, just in the next budget. You just go ahead and meet that gap, correct?
Right.
So that would be the solution to
the waiver. This is why I'm responsible to present this, because we're getting
toward the budget season again. I know the numbers are still off. It's a specialized program, and I want to figure out if there are any other in-kind things that we apply to that. So this is often, this is more often, this is often, this is often through that. But then also, what the dollar value gap would be if it's a $5 or $50,000 gap. I want to be able to have that for budget season, but I'd like to be aware of the thing. It's been an issue for a number of years, obviously.
And we've gone under the county IT for fiscal year 14, so that'll be able to be included as well. So, I mean, we have more things to add. And I was trying to run the numbers, and I don't know that my numbers were accurate, but we are definitely getting closer.
So. But if we couldn't close the gap, then we would go through the five-year exemption program.
Well, for instance, if the state comes to us now and says, you're not meeting the requirement, and we can definitely demonstrate financially that we clearly are now, then we wouldn't necessarily go through the process. If we aren't meeting, then based on what the office says, we will have to then send a report back, do this, and they'll give us essentially a five-year timeline to meet. I don't want to go through anything paperwork.
Well, and it's a hearing, too. Like, myself and probably somebody from finance would have to go up to the state before the library board at the state level. So if we can show that we're already meeting it, even though the numbers based 2 years ago we weren't, but now we are, so hopefully we could avoid that whole process.
I just don't want to be surprised. 2 months into budget season, oh, by the way, we have found another $100,000.
And it's not that much.
Yeah. Do we have any other questions for Ms. Hoffman?
I have one more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
November 2013 is actually the five-year anniversary in the new library. It's hard to believe it's been 5 years already. But starting Thursday, November 7th through Saturday, November 16th, the Friends of the Library are doing a book sale, bake sale. And the Saturday, the 9th, we're going to do a patron day with some sort of anniversary celebration, but we haven't decided yet. But if anybody's interested in that. Any other questions?
Any further questions? Thank you very much, as always. Moving on to tab C, E911 project up, E911 project update, Sheriff Washington.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I was asked to come and give the board a update on the radio project. So in doing that, I thought it would also be beneficial to you. I passed you a handout, Mr. Nichols did for me. I don't know if you can bring that handout up.
Do you want which one, the
presentation one, not the map. I thought it would be good to give you a historical timeline just to bring you back so you have a full understanding. I'm not going to get into the details as much, but just to give you an overview. I wanted to show you kind of historically where we've come from with the project to where we are today. And basically, what you're not going to see on that screen is what's been changed on your latest edition of your handout. So for the audience, I'll have to speak to that. The current system as it stands is about 30 to 35 years of age, the base infrastructure of it. And in February of 2000, which the audience doesn't see up there, we've made a change to it. I was able to go back and find that in February of 2000 that the county hired a consulting firm to present a final report to the county on its radio status. That was back in 2000. RCC Consultants did it. And then in July of 2005, another study was done by Howlett and Associates for the county. Same thing, a radio study, an analysis of the CRIP to tell us what we need to do about the radio system. And then moving forward to February 2011, which you have on the screen there, another study was done by one of the prior consulting firms, the county hired again, to say, tell us what you want us to do about a radio system. So when you have heard about all these studies you've done, it's actual. I've got all three of them right here. That we paid for over the last several years, which leads us to where we are today. Eventually, back in 2012, we came back, leading up to 2012, we came back to the board and said, listen, we've got to do something. We've had three studies, and the board at that time inclined to start funding the project. So what I've done for you is, from a funding standpoint, is look at it in FY12 to say you set aside, the board set aside, $3.5 million was appropriated. In FY13, you set another $4 million towards the project. And that was based on an estimated proposal by the third and final consulting firm's estimates. And then in FY13, the board decided that at that time, because the bulk of the money was not going to be used, which we all recognize and agreed to, you pulled some money out of that to adjust your operating budget, which was $100,000, which was spent on Jobber and Job, basically. And then in FY14 is where we are. In FY13, we also spent $321,500 and some change towards the narrow banding piece of the project. It was not addition to it, it was less thereof. And so with that, you allowed us to meet the federal mandate, and you'll see further down in there, of narrow banding. So I wanted you to know if, financially where we are with the project as well as historically from where we've come. And so the balance sits approximately, and I checked with Ernie today to get the closest figures as of today, sits around about $7.178,000. In February 2012, the Board of Supervisors approved about the $383,000 to be spent towards the narrow banding project, which included frequency. And I think there's some confusion because narrow banding is about taking the spectrum and bringing it this, instead of here, bringing it here. So we talked about the frequency and partial equipment purchases. And so year to date for that project, which we met the deadline, it's about $321,513 spent of the $383 that was appropriated out of the $7 million. Okay. Then in November and December 2012, Clear Communications completed that project with the frequency requirements set by the FCC. And the part of the agreement was, with the team at that time, was that any current equipment that was eligible for upgrade that was in use was converted to meet the FCC requirement of narrow banding, and any equipment that was not at that time that was on hand, we knew we had to replace. So we utilized current existing portables, things of that sort, mobiles, that met and was able to be exchanged into the narrow banding frequency. Those that pieces that were not, we replaced. Then in fall of 2012, early spring of 2013, all during that time frame, we had a lot, and I mean a lot of communication with the county attorney's office, not so much Mr. Payne per se, but his office, which gave us a lot of information back and forth, seeking legal guidance on contract and cooperative procurement procedures. And at the same time, just keep in mind that we were working with meeting the deadline of December the 12th also for our emergencies operations plan for the county. So we had a lot of big projects going on at the same time. In early spring of 2013, we met with the county attorney's office again, the county staff, Clear Communications, which is our service provider for our radio system, to determine a sole source, justification procedures and guidelines. Process was presented to the board and approved by the Board of Supervisors. In May of this year, the sole source was posted publicly to meet the guidelines for sole source, working with the procurement officer in his office, and that process was approved by him and so forth, done and completed. And in June of this year, a letter of intent was sent from the county to the vendor, which would actually build a system for us, to request a draft contract for review. In July of this year, we also met county staff, Clear Communications, Fire and Rescue met with Motorola, the company, again, the vendor that would build the system, to determine the next steps. And I've kind of listed some of those steps that was listed that we communicated in and meeting, such as seeking potential frequencies, identified buildings with radio issues such as the school, courthouse, etc. County review the type of system again to make sure that what we initially sought out over the past years we still wanted today and needed today. Motorola themselves will look at sites, current public and private sites, and they'll also have to address legal process for site acquisition. Motorola, the company, will also put together a proposal for staff to review, and then Motorola will prepare a contract for the county attorney's office to review. And then, of course, anything dealing with that contract will eventually get to the board for its final decision. So that's kind of the steps. So as you can see, a lot has been going on, and even though you may not have heard about it a lot of things have been going on behind the scenes, so to speak. And again, the goal is this month we will get together, we will meet, have all that information given back to Motorola so that when we meet with them the next round, they know clearly what they need to do to go forward. So that's kind of the timeline of where we are. What I wanted to do, Mr. Nippers, if you could bring up that map now, in part along with this, I took it upon myself because there's a lot of moving targets here. You know, whether or not the county invests and start getting into the tower construction business and owning towers, or whether or not we go to the private sector. And we've heard a lot about cell towers. And the one thing that I could not get a good grasp on is I knew where the towers were because I drive the county every day for the most part. I can take you to a tower. But pictorially, I think a lot of people just could not see where those towers were in the county. So I worked with the planning department. It was really good. I bugged them to death over and over and over. You know, I moved this one here, moved that one there, that kind of thing, to create this pictorial map for you of where the towers were in the county. So what you see there is a couple of things I wanted to make sure that you understood is I wanted you to know the current location of towers that are up and built in the county as of today. So that's what those blue boxes indicate. I'm sorry, I have copies of that. I failed to get you a copy, but we'll get you one. But those blue boxes indicate the current towers that are up and built today in the county. What I wanted to show you also was where are there existing towers in the county that may not be an actual tower. So, for example, a water tower is a site, but it's not a tower that we own or we may not own or that either way, we use it for a radio site. So you'll see those little water tower insignias there that are existing in the county. And then I also wanted to show you existing non-water towers in the county. If you go down to the south part of the county, to your left down there, that indicates, or is that a little thing here? Oh. I get it all the time. It won't take me out. But there's a tower down there. In Scottsville that we have an antenna on that actually belongs to Albemarle County. So there's a lot of things that have to take place, as you can see, when we talk about towers, and not just the actual monopoles towers that you see running around that you assume are just cell phone towers. But we have antennas and things that operate on water towers as well that belong to the county that also may not belong to the county, like these towers down here. You have one at Omohundra, and you have one down in Bremer. So those are actual water towers. And then I wanted to show you also what are existing towers that the county owns. Well, you know, we don't own but so many. We only own two. That's one in Palmyra. That's right in here. That's up by the school board office. And then we own one over in Kent Store that's over in that area right there. Those are the only two towers that the county itself actually owns. Then I wanted to show you, along with that, they are still county towers in the big scheme of things, but the school board put the towers up. Technically, they're owned by the school board. So I wanted to show you in the green boxes, you'll see that there's four little green boxes right in here that indicate that there's a tower sitting there that's a monopole tower that the school board owns at each school site. Okay?
And then, just as a side, those aren't actually, two of them I know for sure not actually on the school board, but the Contera Tower.
In the planning department, they indicated it's property of the county, so that's what we have to go on. But either way, they're at the school sites. And then there are, I wanted to show you approved existing, as I said, non-county sites, as you can see along the corridors. And then the last thing I wanted to show you, it's a lot to show you, but I wanted to give you a true pictorial because that I believe we've never really focused of where we're putting towers. And so then I wanted to show you along this corridor here since December of 2012. I'm going to go get you, Mr. Nichols, because I'm going this direction. There were four more SUPs that are approved. That's what the X indicates. 1, 2, 3, 4. Of non-built tower sites. But since December, there were four more SUPs approved. So with all that being said, why am I showing this again? To show you a pictorial, but also to show you that this is why you have so much dead coverage in the county. mostly all of your towers, whether they're publicly owned and we own something and have something on them, or whether they're privately owned and we have something on them, which most of them we don't, is in the central to northwest quarter of the county. There's a big board all the way right through here. So as we go forward with the radio project, this will help guide us. When we met a couple weeks ago with Motorola, they were really glad to get this because it helps them. But they will still have to do their work, but this gives them a good tool to start with of indicating whether or not, you know, they approach us to say, this tower here, can you tell us how high it is and who owns it? Maybe we can talk with them. That's why I talked about site acquisition and contract. All of those things will be a part because the goal would be, my goal would be not to have the county get into the contract tower business, if all possible. One, it'd be a savings for the county drastically, hopefully, and then two, just long-term maintenance of Wayne having to maintain and worry about towers would be a big plus. So the goal would be to try to get on as many private carrier towers as possible can, but they may require some policy changes, all of those things. But they're in the works. So for the big scope of things, we're on target. We are moving. We're not sitting still. We've gotten over the biggest hurdle, and that is we don't have a vendor on board. So that at this point, the contract side of it is different, but we have a vendor that we've indicated and are working with them. So that's kind of where we are with the project. So I've heard some people say, I'm sorry, Ms. Booker, I've heard some people say, well, how much money do you think we could save now? Well, that's really premature at this point. Because even though I don't want you to get confused on, even though you set aside $383, we spent $321, you can't say that we've saved $50,000. That's not true. Because that was just a piece of the puzzle. That's a larger, big piece of the puzzle that has to be dealt with here also. That was just a piece we set aside prematurely to fix the immediate problem of the narrow banding piece only.
So, have you identified which towers that you would have to be on in order for the Sheriff's Department to have the coverage?
Well, it wouldn't be just the Sheriff's Department. It would be any tower that we identify is going to be a public safety tower. So, it would be the Sheriff's Department antenna and fire and rescue antennas. The one thing I didn't show you was those red stars indicate from the study the five areas that we know we have weaknesses in that they've identified to say you've got to have a tower, if nothing else, in these five areas. Now, where exactly that will be determined by the vendor when they actually get into doing all of the engineering study that they'll be doing on behalf of the county as part of the contract. But those X's indicate we got to have coverage down in there. That's right. As you can see, those are dead areas. Wherever a tower will be designated to be for coverage is where fire and rescue will co-locate them.
Have you heard anything back from, or I know we got the narrow banding component down, the narrow banding. Are we hearing anything on when that's coming?
Yes, it is. there's a lot of discussion about that, too. I don't confuse the board even more now. But you have narrow, but we went from here to here. Now there's talk about within the next 10 to 20 years making people go from here to here. And again, a lot of this has to deal with the federal level of, it's about money. That's what it's going to boil down to. You've heard some discussion about the 700 megahertz system, frequencies dealing with D-block and public safety spectrums. So a lot of it has to deal with the ability, who's going to control and get those bandwidths. That's the key. So I've heard about it. There's nothing mandated in writing, no talk about it yet.
Okay.
I would imagine that it would be a big challenge because people like ourselves are investing, you know, several million dollars just to meet what they already are required to do. And then they tell us, oh, by the way, in another 20 years, you're going to have to set aside another million to another dollar.
Okay. What will the $7 million be spent on? Is that equipment?
It would be a combination. The $7 million will be targeted for the infrastructure of two things. One, you have what we call is the infrastructure of designing and building the system. You know, that's everything from looking at an antenna to a microwave system, all of these things, to hiring a project manager to manage the project. We do not have the expertise on staff. We all are good, but, you know, sometimes you have to be realistic. We've talked about Mr. Smith and I've that just to manage this, the size of a project, it's very complex, and you have to have a lot of detailed knowledge. So we are looking at hiring a project manager to manage the project. And we've been in communication with you. So it would be for the management of the project, sort of like a clerk of the work. It would be for the infrastructure of the system, which would include all of the equipment, things of that sort. It would be if we had to do build towers ourselves or things of that sort. So it has nothing to do with, there's no money about land acquisition or anything of that sort. It's strictly for those components. That's why I say our job is to hopefully try to steer in the right direction as much as we can on not getting into having to build towers and own towers and all those things. That's kind of what the subject is.
What we're being told is from the date that we signed the contract, which our goal is to push the contract piece as long as quickly as we can. We should be in a position, I'm hoping, to at least get a draft contract within the next 60 to 90 days, at least a draft contract. Because what Motorola is waiting on is for us to say, okay, this is what we finally see in the system that we desire. Now you go do all your work and come back and tell us what we got to do to get there. So we're hoping that that can take place. Outside of the contract, there will be some things that they've got to do. So that's going to be a long dead period that Motorola will do a lot of work that has nothing to do kind of with us per se from the user side. It'll be more just technical work that they'll be doing. But from the date that we actually start the contract to the date of implementation of going to switch, they're giving us at least anywhere between 12 to 18 months.
Do we have a contract now with Motorola to do the work that they're doing now?
We have a letter of intent that meets all of the procurement guidelines. The contract will only come, they can't do the contract until they have some preliminary things that got to be done first. They met with us and gave us some direction on some things that they need from the county, on our side, not board of supervisors, from technical side of things, in order to put into the contract to develop the contract. So once they develop that contract, then the contract will come back to the board for approval, pending approval from the county.
So this idea here that they'll look at sites for the private and public, is that part of the preparation for the contract, or is that additional to the contract?
Yes and no. Some of these things are going to be working simultaneously all together at the same time. So I don't want to get hung up just the contract saying we got to wait to do some of these things.
Some of the stuff they're going to know preliminary because they have a letter of intent from the county that says,
yes, we're obligated for you to start spending your funds to do work on behalf of the county.
In the end, would they then build the sites for us?
They won't do any building. They're not in the business of building sites. The goal is, as you heard me say, is our intent is that we will do procurement of towers if we need to build towers separate, because we can save a lot more money, because if we go through them, all they're going to do is third party it out. So they're gonna hire somebody else to go out and figure out who can they get to build the towers on their behalf on Fort Florida County. That's nothing unheard of. Many localities already have done that. They did. Nelson County, for example, is one county that did it. They bidded the system out through Motorola, but they took care of bidding the towers out separately and saved a lot more money that way.
Fair enough. Any further questions?
So we'd have to build five towers.
Well, again, no. What I want you to understand is those five locations are areas only, geographic areas, that we know that we have to do something in order to get coverage. Whether we co-locate on a tower or whether we build a tower on something, those are areas just identified as weak areas that we've got to do something in.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. We're going to tab D, Zion Guidebook.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, today we are here to present to you the Zion Guidebook. It's still in draft form. It was a 10-week process where we had many internal meetings. We had meetings with the Planning District Commission and two public meetings to get public input. We had two meetings with our committee, and then we also gave updates to the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors throughout the process. Throughout the process, we and with the committee, we discussed many issues, and as time went on, we removed some of the specifics of the plan, partly because of the time constraints, but also partly because there are still many unknowns. And we also decided to focus on the UDA area, and so the scope changed a little bit, and we removed the map from the plan. All of that was to make the plan much more flexible, and because at this point, we're still waiting for decisions to be made on things such as infrastructure and boundaries. And so today we're here to present it. Jay Lindsay will present the findings, and then I'll be back up for questions. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, I'm going to be presenting the results of the Zion Crossroads Guidebook. First and foremost, I want to give credit where it's due. The Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission spent a lot of time and a lot of effort in putting this together. And while they aren't able to be here today because they have many other projects, we do appreciate what they did. The format of my presentation will follow the format of the guidebook. So first we'll look at an introduction and existing conditions very briefly, as well as the influence of previous plans on this document. That will be followed by a hopefully brief general discussion of transect areas, what they are, what they do, and then specifics on the three zones that have been delineated or determined for the project. This guidebook is intended as a guide for all of the stakeholders involved in Zion Crossroad. That includes builders, the owners, developers, citizens, everybody involved. It even begins with an introduction for land developers, for policymakers, and for citizens. It's intended to be a useful guiding document. Zion Crossroads is envisioned as the county's primary economic development engine. It's supposed to be a place where regional employment and mixed use exist side by side and work together for the benefit of the county. This guidebook intends to encourage efficient land use and to help us move forward in meeting the goals of the county for Zion Crossroads. This is a look at the, and regrettably, even from that size, it's still hard to see, but these are the current existing land uses in Zion Crossroads. As Ms. Fincham mentioned, the scope of the project has been reduced from all of the colored area that you see to a lot closer to the intersection of 250 and 15. I'm nervous about shooting anybody with this laser. Where the circles are, basically. Which is considered the UDA, or urban development area. Obviously, there's a surprisingly robust mix of uses, everything from single-family residential and single-family residential with agricultural to auto scrap yards, a sawmill, industrial uses, and religious uses. But the most important thing to take note of on this particular map is all of the gray areas, which are the undeveloped or vacant parcels in Zion Crossroads. That comprises 43% of Zion Crossroads being vacant, which is not only a tremendous opportunity, it's an imperative that it be developed in an organized fashion, because that is a lot of what's there. The reason that this particular area is so important and has been repeatedly designated as a focal point. Partly it's due to transportation. It's right where Interstate 64 has an exit, as well as the intersections of State Routes 15 and 250. A lot of people travel those three corridors, making this an important regional point. At the same time that we're discussing this, Louisa, just across the county line, is experiencing rapid commercial and residential growth. This exerts pressure on the county, but it also provides an opportunity for something unique and regional to happen in that area. The area has experienced some growth, 24 households over the 10 years from 2000 to 2010. There are currently 26,000 square feet of commercial and 484,000 square feet of industrial space. As I mentioned, 43% of the CPA is vacant. And as public water and sewer capacity is under consideration, this will obviously affect the development potential of the area. However, as Ms. Fincham mentioned, this plan is very adaptable. It can be ratcheted up or down in scale and scope to meet the realities that we face moving forward, which is one of the things that makes this plan so special. Previous plans had contributed quite a bit of good work and research and come up with a lot of important recommendations, and it was important to incorporate those and use those moving forward. So here's a very brief look at some of what came from previous plans. The utilization of town centers and the utilization of Zion Crossroads as a primary regional center for economic development. The idea of a distinct identity for Zion Crossroads with real regional economic development and community services. At the same time, having regional mixed use and the related design specifications such as traditional neighborhood design. At the same time, absorbing the bulk of regional growth as is defined by the CPAs and by UDAs. And particularly the Fluvanna-Louisa multimodal corridor study contain a lot of design recommendations that can be found essentially unchanged in this current document. The comprehensive plan introduced the transects that we'll discuss and further emphasize the need for traditional neighborhood development. Finally, the regional water supply plan and the ROI examined various scenarios, and some of the findings and assumptions there have informed this document, but as we've said, this document is very adaptable, and as assumptions go up or down, the document can do likewise. I'm going to, as quickly as I can, discuss the general idea of transect areas. They're basically a progression of zones from the town's central business district or core outward through mixed use areas and neighborhoods with agriculture and rural uses out on the periphery. So if you were to visualize the densest uses in the center, it becomes less intense as you move outwards towards the rural portions of the county. It focuses on putting the growth in the urban center and leaving the rural lands rural through the rest of the county. At the same time, organizing communities into connected and walkable neighborhoods. The specific transect zones, and the best way to think of this is sort of a scale of 1 to 6, 1 being completely undeveloped, and 6 would be the densest area that you can envision, although that all becomes relative based on what community you're discussing. The three that were designated for Zion Crossroads are 5 being the densest, through 3 being the least dense, and 5 would be your town center, which transitions into a mixed-use village, and finally a mixed-use neighborhood, which is more of what you would consider a traditional neighborhood, and that transitions on its periphery to the rural environment that we're all used to in Fluvanna County. Beginning with the town center, T5, this is the Planning District Commission's rendering of what a town center would look like. It's important to note that none of the roads are or parcels are supposed to be relatable to a specific road or parcel. So the road that you see at the bottom of this depiction could be 250, it could also be 15. It's more supposed to give you an idea of how everything works together. As you can see, there's a mix of economic uses. There are dense multifamily residential. There are industrial uses as well as technology and industry. There could be an educational facility. In this transect zone, Zion Crossroads, the town center would be the center of employment and commerce, not just for Fluvanna, but for the region. It would be a significant contributor to job growth, cultural amenities, and the tax base. Some comparable developments, just to give you an idea of the perspective, would be the Peninsula Town Center in Hampton, Shirlington Village in Arlington, Virginia, or downtown Short Pump. This is a look at how the uses would break down. The purple that you see in the map is technology and industry. The orange represents high-density residential. There's also storefront commercial, residential. Civic uses would be possible. Anchor commercial, or obviously larger commercial and retail activities. The large blue represents that much of this area would be office and research. And finally, green is various public space that would be available in a town center. The emphasis here is on proximity and on the interaction of uses. For example, office workers and industry workers would have access within walking distance to restaurants, which would be great for them and great for the restaurants as they would have a built-in clientele. And it's that kind of dense proximity and interaction that makes something like this work. It also, as I mentioned, incorporates elements of traditional neighborhood development, which is a style of design, although it goes further than that. It's a style of making a community work together. It involves human-scaled streetscapes with trees and benches, basically a walkable area, a diversity or mix of uses and activities. It's interconnected. People can get from one end to the other and from within and without using more than one method of transportation. It's safe to walk. It could, if not immediately, it could eventually be adapted to accept and thrive with transit. Parking is more on street and in structures. Parking can be shared in this situation between daytime and evening uses. Higher intensity office research, technology, and light industry would be available, and higher density residential areas with walkable amenities such as retail. And again, all of this works together to create sort of a dense, interactive environment. Moving out from the center to the less dense T4 or mixed-use village, as you can see, you're looking at less density. There's more green space. It changes the mix of uses. These are vibrant places to live and work within the UDA. The intensity is obviously less than the town center, but the neighborhood is still close together and walkable. There's an integration of multifamily structures and townhomes with single-family, public spaces for recreation, stormwater management, and simple aesthetic appeal. There is commercial and industrial, but there would be less so than in the previously mentioned T5 zone. It is still walkable with complete streets. The densities in this area would be lower, between 8 and 12 dwelling units per acre. And neighborhood retail and restaurants are still walkable and making the area convenient and interactive. The mix of uses, as I mentioned, is different. Technology and industry still comprise part of it, a large part of it. Public space becomes even more important. And while there is still high-density residential, much of that gives way to townhomes and single-family. However, there is still room for mixed-use commercial, large commercial, restaurants, and even civic uses. And the blue structure in the middle is there to represent an elementary school, but it could be a library or any other civic institution. This transitions us down to the least dense part of the UDA, which is the mixed-use neighborhood, or T3. As you can see, this really looks like what we think of as a traditional neighborhood. There's a grid pattern. There is green space. You're looking at a lot more small, single-family lots.
However, over on the right side, there is an employment park. It could be something along the lines of what you might see in Innsbruck, any kind of employment park along those lines, still set far enough away from the residences that it's not disruptive, but close enough that the entire area is still interactive. As I mentioned, it's primarily residential and much quieter than the other areas, but there's still retail and services to meet citizens' day-to-day needs. There would be townhomes, public spaces more for simple recreation and beautification, a light amount of commercial, still complete streets, always walkable and connective. Residential densities here would be lower, again, down to between 6 and 10 dwelling units per acre. From this portion of the community, you would still be able to access the other two previously mentioned transects, either through walking or other modes at some point, making the entire thing connective and interactive with itself. As I mentioned, there's the possibility for campus-style office parks like you would find in Innsbruck and Richmond. The breakdown of uses in this situation is significantly more skewed towards the residential single-family. However, there are still townhomes and some high-density residential. Office parks take on a more important role. Public space is reduced in part because of all the single-family lots, but there still would be parks and recreation space. There's still room for civic institutions. The smaller blue structure in this one actually does represent a library, and the few little bits of red that you can see would represent mixed-use, storefront commercial, convenience retail, things to meet people's day-to-day needs and still keep somewhat of a mix of uses and an interactivity.
If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? None. That was outstanding.
Wow.
Thank you. That's exactly what I've been looking for. So, okay. Yeah. No questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Very awesome. Moving on to the consent agenda, is there any items that need to be pulled? I'd like to pull tab H.
And Bill, I'd like to ask one or two questions on that when you get them out of that.
Okay, you can go ahead and start with tab F. Fine. What page are you on this week?
We're on page one. I'm just wondering, here on page one, where we have the lawyer, professional services. Maybe if, rather than being under the Board of Supervisors, that you might want to put it under the, with paying the county attorneys. I'm getting my tongue tied up here. Whether that shouldn't be included in the county attorney, both of them, on that one place, rather than back here under Board of Supervisors, even though that comes out of our funds to identify it at a later time in the budget. Would that be better to move it there, or do you think it's better where it is?
Never thought about that.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
I was wondering whether or not on page one, the Board of Supervisors line, there's a line there for...
Well, that one's up there.
There's a line there specifically for Park Palais. And Mr. Weaver's asking whether or not that's better categorized under the county attorney's budget.
We've been keeping that. I mean, there's money set aside in the boards for that project specifically. So the county attorney line has been specifically for Mr. Payne's company, and there is money set aside for that project in the Board of Supervisors line. And that's why we've been paying them out of that line. I mean, it can be done either way, but the money was set aside in your budget.
If you intend to move it, I would recommend you move the money to you. And when there's more money required, we have to appropriate out of the budget line from the Board of Supervisors. If you want to show down below, you should transfer the money to the money stays with that budget line. It wouldn't be for a county attorney, it would be for additional services under county attorney's budget line.
Okay, I guess. On page two here, where we have lease rent, Kodak, is that shredding, S-H-E-R-D-D-I-N-G?
Yes, it's just a typo.
is that, that's, you're renting that out on what, a monthly basis, a yearly basis?
They bring, they have big bins in the sheriff's office, the treasurer's office, treasurer, commissioner, treasurer's office, and county admin offices, and they're the size of your, well, some are smaller, but the typical ones are the size of your trash can at your home, that you wheel out into the street, and they have a padlock on them, and when you have documents that need to be disposed of a certain way, you just drop it in there. They come out once a month, they bring the truck up, they haul it out, they dump it in the truck, they shred it out of the truck.
So it's cheaper that way than
we looked at the cost of that versus buying shredders. Honestly, when I first got here, I would stand for 30 or 40 minutes at the shredder, shredding the materials that was in my little box underneath my desk, just because it needed to be shredded. And I'd stand there and shred and shred and shred. Plus, the shredder we were using wasn't even a cross-cut shredder. It wasn't even legal to shred those kinds of things. And if you're using, if you have things like in human resources that have people's names on or social security numbers, those have to be disposed of in a certain way. So we investigated the cost of this, and then it would be a very cheap alternative, much cheaper than buying the equipment and standing in front of a shredder and shredding ourselves.
Okay. Sounds good. Notice also that we are missing the numbers on here. And on page 3, power technology, client access, and maintenance. I wonder what that is. It's $41,450.
That's the annual maintenance. That's the annual agreement, the cost we pay them for that system. It's an annual maintenance cost.
Once a year?
To use the annual.
That's the annual. Okay. That's all I
have. That's all we have. Any other questions on the accounts payable?
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions on the accounts payable?
Moving to tab H very quickly.
I don't know if members of the board have had a chance to look at that. They're actually at South Austin Road at 600. The plan there, and if you go ahead and you move to the VDOT map there, it actually looks like there's an intent to actually move out 53 closer to further away from where the intersection is and closer to the homes that are there. I'm not so sure that's something that we can just tuck into the consent agenda.
I really didn't understand that.
Mr. Nichols, if you wouldn't mind bringing that up all the way.
Yeah, here's the...
you have the image?
There's a map.
The effectively, you're looking at... trying to see the distance between D and G there. It's 0.03 miles, so... but you're looking at moving it out, so it, you know, obviously if you come on South Coast Boston Road, say from here to Lake Monticello, it's a pretty steep bend there, but moving that out a little ways obviously would improve that turn, but I know that there would be several property owners along that road that would be significantly impacted by such a proposal. So I'm not so sure that I'm entirely comfortable including it in the consent agenda. I think it's probably best to have it included in September, first meeting September.
Are they talking about moving 53?
Yes, that's exactly
right.
That's
to the right or to the left?
From this direction heading towards Lake Monticello would be to the right.
That would impact that church up there.
That area, yes, it certainly would.
Would impact the church?
Where's the roundabout then? The roundabout
Where's
is
the roundabout?
Further down.
There it is. That's the...
Where?
The roundabout would be further down the road. This is that last real tight turn just before you hit that roundabout.
I apologize. I didn't pick up this one. I just thought it was a span effect coming through, and I don't know what it is today.
It's the roundabout that's already done. Okay. Well, then that's different. We're not improving upon it, so... Okay.
This work is complete.
It's the roundabout.
That is not the way I read the... it is the roundabout. We're not doing more work on the roundabout. Is that correct? Okay.
It's definitely not doing more work. It's
okay. This is a routine item that is not further road construction at South Boston Road.
It's not additional construction.
Okay.
I think this is just closing out that project, but let us check on it. If there's not a time frame, let me just wait until the next meeting.
So it looks like that the roundabout is in between those two parallel, so-called parallel blocks.
Okay. So this is just sort of, we're accepting the work done, no changes necessary. Okay, this is a routine item. Thank you. Okay, I have no further changes. Somebody like to move the consent agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by everyone. Mr. Chester will suffice. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. We have no items of unfinished business. Do we have any items of new business?
Mr. Chairman, I have an item of unfinished business.
Mr. Payne.
This just came in this afternoon. That's why you didn't know about it. I've already discussed this with Mr. Weaver. With respect to the Davenport case, as you know, that was remanded by the Supreme Court to the Circuit Court for further proceedings. There are several things that are already on the docket to be dealt with. There's another demurrer pending, and there's just a special plea and various other things. What we have done, and this was at my recommendation, Mr. Pallet agreed with me, is that we are bringing that to the court to set those things for trial. So we're beginning to move this thing on. We finally got it back from the Supreme Court. We want to move it on to get these things disposed of. Mr. Pallet is today filing a precipe to get the matter set at the next docket call, which is August 26th. We'll get a date at that point. I can't tell you when the date is because I don't know what's available.
Of course, certainly. Okay, that's good news then. Any other items of unfinished business at this
point? Yes, I wanted to bring up the issue that Mr. Harris brought up earlier speaking. I'm quite concerned with the ROI from the county side. He indicated that he'd call in and talk to Mr. Nichols about the ROI with the Thomas Jefferson Planning District, and that there were quite some differences of opinion from the county side as compared to the Thomas Jefferson Planning District. And what I'm wondering is, why have we had this ROI evidently for some time? Why has it not been given out to the public?
Mr. Nichols?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
We've had the ROI since April.
April,
and Mr. Weaver is wondering why that ROI has not been released to the public.
The board never said that it releases to the public. I've come back to the board multiple times and said that we think it's structurally flawed and asked them to work on it and present that information, and the board has never authorized it to release to the public.
Is there a reason why the list of changes to the ROI was not delivered to the Thomas Jefferson Planning District in, say, May or June or July?
We didn't know about it.
You did not have a copy of the ROI?
No, we didn't know about the problems in the ROI.
There was not a meeting with Thomas Jefferson Planning District to review the ROI?
In May, no.
Was there a meeting with Thomas Jefferson Planning District to review the ROI?
In June and July, yes. And they probably identified the formulas that were in error and there hadn't been identified upon. Like last year's ROI, the 2012 ROI, when it came to the county, there was never any analysis done of it. I've gone back now and checked that. That one's structurally different than the updated ROI that was given to the system. And the staff finally sat down and took that document, sat down with the TJPDC and started asking questions about the various documents, various formulas. We found formula after formula that we believe is incorrect. And when I asked to have those corrected,
what concerns me there also is that when we tried to get back to Thomas Jefferson District, they didn't seem to have the time, of course, to check those corrections as what we thought maybe was a mistake. So where does that leave us then? Are we going to do those later? But we need to check one set of facts against the other set of facts.
And Mr. Weaver, I can confirm to you that last week, as a matter of fact, I took a list that I received from Mr. Nichols, about 5 pages of
I'm aware of that.
And I sat down with TJPDC,
and
it was literally a 5-minute conversation with TJPDC. Mr. Cockrell accepted those documents and contacted Mr. Nichols immediately. He sent along further changes. And that was Friday of last week, I believe.
But the documents going back to Mr. Nichols, which I saw, was they didn't have time. They had the rest of the district to handle it all, and they didn't have time to meet with him, which concerns me.
And I think that the rationale for that was is that the when they actually received the changes, it was 3 months after the fact. And I think that was their primary concern.
Well, I guess another thing that concerns me is if we do have all of these errors, and I'm not saying we do, but I don't know. I believe that I'd ask for my money back if we're going to have a report that's strewn with errors and all. Well, I don't think we should be paying $6,700 for it. And not only that, they wanted more money for us to check the errors. That concerns me too. It looks to me like that would have been part of the $6,700.
That request certainly can be made. I think my primary concern would be is that it took us 3 months to get errors back to TJPDC.
It did not, Mr.
You delivered a comprehensive list of errors to Thomas Jefferson Planning District on April 17th. April 18th, April 19th, April 20th, July 20th. I mean, my point still stands. We did not deliver a comprehensive list of concerns or comments until Friday of last week. And so the question being raised by the public at this point in time is either staff dropped the ball or we're playing politics. We clearly aren't doing that because we didn't have a copy of the ROI until last week. So now the question remains as to what exactly went wrong. And I don't have a clear answer on that.
My question is, how were we having a public hearing on an item we didn't have an ROI on?
That's an excellent question. That is an excellent question. Why don't we, and that's an excellent question.
And from the email I got today from TJPDC, we probably aren't going to have a corrected ROI by...
I'm told 2 to 3 weeks.
The email I got was when we have time. We'll get to it. And that's...
Well, my concern is we have all the information.
Not that it's their fault either.
It was given to us.
I'm not saying it's their fault.
Today, this afternoon. So anything I have here, as far as I'm concerned, is public information. And anyone is welcome to see this. And I assume...
And it should be.
Yeah.
But is it a corrected version?
But it's... No, ma'am.
No, it's not. It's not a corrected version.
So what would the public want?
No, it's like getting the ROI that was put online. It's not correct. So it's the same information. And unfortunately, it's the same information we're working with. So we're working with incorrect information to make one of the largest decisions that can be made for this county. And we don't have an ROI. And we didn't have one when we set the public hearing up. So... you're going to have hundreds of folks asking questions about things that we don't even know about. How would we expect them to know? We're not disseminating enough information out to the public. And in my opinion, a lot of this has been done behind closed doors and kept quiet. But as it stands today, we're 6 months, 7, 8 months, years into this, and we don't have specific information to work on.
Can we get the right information
and
out to the public, and will it be in time for them to go through it?
Absolutely.
And, at least, I mean, that's what
I'm hearing from Thomas Jefferson Planning District is 2 to 3 weeks.
I hear what they are saying, and that's what
they're
right.
If Mr. Kenny's saying 2 to 3 weeks,
they're right. And we need to get the right information out to them. If we can do that, then that's what we need to do.
Then the public should expect it within a month.
The public.
That information from Tom TJ is already out there now, though.
Yeah, but it's not right.
No, but it's not correct.
It's on Facebook, is it not?
But it's not correct.
Not correct.
Huh?
It's not a correct version. Which you have
no, it's not a correct version.
What you have on Facebook is...
Mr. Chairman, there are three versions of documents around. There's an April draft, clearly identified as an April draft by Tom Construction Planning District Commission. We met with them a couple times after that. They gave us a July final. That's what they called it, the July final. That was July 15th.
2013,
this year. Forget the last year.
All right. And
just this year. An April draft. They came back to us on July 15th with the TJPDC final. From July 15th forward, because they identified some formulas that were wrong, they corrected those. I've got those specifically identified. There was a significant change from the April draft to that one. Staff then has been working since then to identify and inspect. I've spent literally hundreds of hours away from work trying you have before you is the staff work product, which is TJPDC's product, the exact same assumptions and data, but the formula is correct. I just know the formula is in the first one just to be factually wrong. They're just not structurally correct. So what you've got is three different documents that say three different numbers. And I know that you've been waiting for TJPDC to validate that staff is making the right corrections or not. All I'm waiting for is plans to release whatever you want to release.
Which one?
April draft one is absolutely correct, and TJPDC knows that because they corrected it. That's what July 15th.
For the record, when was this ROI, which was delivered to staff in April, when was it delivered to the Board of Supervisors by staff?
Staff was working on the draft.
When was it delivered to the Board of Supervisors? Never. Last week.
No one ever asked.
Never. We never
did. No one ever asked for it.
And that's the problem. But then again, we set a public hearing, and we didn't even know it existed.
But then time goes on, and time goes on. We still don't have information we're asking for, and that impedes our ability to make decisions, does it not?
We kind of just made the same mistake. We set a public hearing for September 18th, and we still don't have an ROI.
Well, because you're expecting a response from TJPDC and a final document from
and
your
time to
attorney.
Review it. And time to review it.
Well, if we don't get it, then you don't move forward.
No, you just said 3 weeks. So
2 to 3 weeks, yes.
So multiply that out.
I understand that you're against it regardless of the data, but regardless of that, this is a question of process, and the process needs to be followed. It doesn't get hijacked by whomever or leaked documents or whatever the case may be.
All I'm saying
is wait on Thomas Jefferson Planning District to get you the data that you've asked for with the corrections. You wait on a final document for your attorney. You've got 6 weeks between now and then.
And public hearing.
And the public hearing. That's plenty of time, in my estimation.
To get the documents.
You spent since May of last year trying to get to this point, and I don't understand why we're taking that time. So
what you're saying is, by 3 weeks, we should have this out to the public to give them a couple weeks to absorb.
Absolutely.
You heard it.
Well, anyway, as far as I'm concerned, anything that everyone has
right
one
now,
under
is public
table. It's public
that's
information.
Public information. So.
So that makes it official, as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Nichols.
So, please, what's the board's direction?
What you have now is public knowledge.
I've released whatever
include
information
this as
you
a packet
have.
Online and say this is the information presented by the county administrator to the Board of Supervisors on this day.
If I may, I would suggest that we just post three documents. The April draft, the July 15th file, and the staff update. Because they have exactly the same assumptions, all three documents.
I think it's important.
And we haven't seen two of them.
Well, I'll send it to the board.
I understand.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to do that so that the public is not misled as to what they are. I mean, it may well be that a member of the public, like me, would go and see.
We can all learn together.
We're misled as to what it is.
Right.
And we can all learn together.
And we apologize to the public.
Absolutely.
We're trying to get this straight. We must get it straight. And you said it's the most important that decision we have to make.
Mm-hmm.
And you are part of that. We are very sorry to hear you.
Who's there?
Ditto.
And I have something. You all finished with that?
Yes, ma'am. You have something you'd like to add?
The grocer grand for IGA stores. Park Union's Festival Fund and Park Union was publicized.
There you go.
So we are in the hands of all the IGA things you read about. I'm not in any of those pictures, though.
All right. Do we have any other items to do business at this rate? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to the second round of public comment. Again, please remember to keep your comments directed to the board on topic within 5 minutes. Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris is stairs going to get beat to the podium.
Help, Mr. Nichols, help!
You can address the Mr. Miller.
2 minutes is up. Oh, thanks, Bob. My name is Adrian Miller from Lake Monticello. A little off the subject. I wanted to comment about Sheriff Washington. I think we're very fortunate with his his use of the laser pen, that he doesn't have a laser sight on his pistol, because we would all be in jeopardy. Next, this is a magnificent building. I said, I came to see where my tax dollars went. I sat in right there, C-101. Another thing, this building, I understand, is earthquake-proof. The only problem I have with that, the acoustics are not that good here. You couldn't even hear an earthquake if it hit the building. It is a problem with acoustics, I'll assure you. It's very difficult to understand what's being said. I'm not sure about the Zion's guidebook that I saw. Was that Fairfax County, Northern Virginia, Arlington County? It didn't look like Flavanna at all. And anyway, I had an interesting experience yesterday. I went to Zion's Crossroads to Lowe's to buy a stove. I talked to a lot of people up in Louisa County about their new Wendy's that's going up. They have a new advanced auto. And I said, is Louisa County turning into the fast food market of Central Virginia? And people said, what do you mean? I said, we don't want that in Flavanna County. We don't want that. Anyway, they were upset that Cracker Barrel would not come in the Zion's Crossroads with the disagreements with the supervisors of Louisa County. The same thing happened in Charlottesville on Fifth Street with Cracker Barrel. There were some conflicts between the company and the counties. And they're certainly established counties. I don't know how we could attract anything on this side of Zion's at this point or in the immediate future. I will say something. It seems to me, I wasn't going to talk about the ROI or Aqua. I think anyone who is connected with Aqua or who deals with Aqua, they have their own opinions what that situation is, and I'm sure you'll hear about it in 2 or 3 weeks. Seems to be also when an individual takes an ROI on his own and he analyzes it and comes up with millions of dollars discrepancy in there that could show that we're going to lose money. And here we are, we're paying money, taxpayers' money, for an ROI, two ROIs. That's unacceptable. In my book, it's unacceptable. Please forgive me, I can't get too upset because if I push this, they'll be hauling in a gurney for me. I will say this also. I was impressed with Flavanna County's sales tax revenue the first quarter of 2013 compared to 2012. Thanks to Mrs. Horlacher, she gave me information that our county, the first quarter of this year, I don't know what the second quarter is, the first quarter of this year, Flavanna County's sales tax revenue was up 1 to 2%. Now, I'm not talking about dollars now, I'm talking percentage. Louisa County was down over 10%. People must be shopping locally, and I was impressed by that. I'm looking forward to find out what the second quarter might be and how long this has been going on when people say, Louisa, Louisa, Louisa. It's not their water company. They're losing money up there. The Louisa Water Authority, they keep raising their rates. They're losing money. But anyway, thank you, and you all have a great day. This is a magnificent structure.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Harris.
Is it permissible for me to ask the board questions to get
responses?
It's
not permissible to ask board questions.
Okay. I haven't seen
rhetorically, perhaps. But
I've not seen the updated schedules that Mr. Nichols has prepared, the staff has prepared with the corrections to the formulas. I'm certainly going to hope that they're somewhere in the ballpark of what I calculated. I don't know if he discovered anything that I might have missed. The timeline for this is obviously concerning in terms of how long this has been set on. However, there was a stream of emails that was released today, don't know who by, to the Pflugo blog, I believe it was, detailing, was it Pflugo Interview? Okay, Pflugo Interview, where they were detailed a string of emails between TJPDC, between members of the Board of Supervisors, and the administration. And it's clear to me from those emails that when the changes were presented by Mr. Nichols to TJPDC, they came back and said, our corrections, our calculations are correct. We're not going to change them. Now, that may have changed in the last few days, but that was the indication. There was nothing in those emails to indicate to me that there was ever going to be a change in those ROIs and that it was going to be submitted to the public as it was, and that there was pressure on Mr. Nichols to release them as they were, with him knowing that they had those errors in there. That's manipulation. And when there is an accusation that the errors are invented for political purposes to hold up the process and that we ought to make our decision based on facts, the irony of that, when in fact the facts were correct and the politicization was on the other side, is staggering to me. We need good data. We need good data to make a good decision. And as we go through the rest of this process leading up to September 18th, be aware we're going to be watching. The public is engaged in this decision. We're going to be analyzing the numbers. We're going to be paying attention to what's going on. So keep everything above board, transparent, and give us the accurate raw data that we need to know that we have good information to make our decision on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Anyone else wish to address the board? Mr. Sullivan.
Bill Sullivan, 38 Riverside Drive. I think today's an interesting day because it's a rare occasion that I'm sitting in the room shaking my head in agreement with Mr. Ellenbrook, Mr. Weaver, Dennis Holder, Elizabeth Franklin. I start to wonder if I'm actually on the wrong side here. But honestly, I think we have a huge opportunity in Flavanna to bring economic development to this county and to rebalance our tax base and to find ways to fund core services, including emergency services and education. And the Aqua deal, while there are significant questions that are still to be addressed and the ROI is still there, and I think there's legal issues and there's unexpected cost potentials that need to be looked at, those are the things we need to be looking at, and those are the things that the community needs to understand in terms of what's there and what are we actually deciding. And I think Mr. Ellenbrook mentioned that, hit it on the spot, is why are we having a public hearing when we don't have an ROI? We don't have any of the information. And the answer is simple. We're having public hearings because the five of you have chosen to have a public hearing without this information available, without the actual facts. We're talking about a $20 million investment, potentially more, which is going to impact this county either in a very positive way or in a very negative way. And I think the citizens deserve to have a dialogue over what does this mean. And whether you agree with the ROI is simply wrong. The calculations are fundamentally wrong. We've looked at it. There's no question they're wrong. However, in the expected growth scenario and the high growth scenario, there's huge profitability that comes through that. The discussions that we need to be having in the community are, what are realistic development growth expectations? What can we actually bring to the county and in what time period? What are the hidden costs within this Aqua deal that exists? Or what are the potential? Maybe we don't know it, but what's the give or take in terms of where we may or may not lose money? What are the legal issues? Those are the kind of discussions we need to be having, and the more this board and the county can share some of those details with us, is help us understand what the trade-offs are in terms of where the positives are, where are the concerns, and engaging the community to potentially identify additional positives or additional concerns could be a productive, valuable process. And I think the fact that the fact that Dave was able to find all of these errors in 8 hours, when it's been taking 3 months to bring it, shows that the community can actually add value. There's informed people, there's educated people, there's people with great thoughts, with different perspectives, and I think we have a huge opportunity here to come together and make the right decision, and the more things are held back, and the more things are done in silent, and the less information we have, the less ability we're going to be able to make the right decision. So I urge this board and the county and the administration to start pulling information together as opposed to just data dumping. Oh, here's this, here's that. What are the implications? What are the actual benefits of this deal? What are the real concerns that need to be addressed? Because there's a lot of concerns that are irrelevant, that people are making up in terms of, you know, where it is. So what are the real concerns? I think the more we can clearly articulate that, the better dialogue we can have in the public hearing and have a legitimate debate, because we all want the best for Flavanna. So thank you.
And I find myself in agreement with Bill Sullivan, something in the water at the high school. Anyone else wishing to address the board? Mr. Holden.
I'm not as tall as Adrian. Dennis Holder, still from Kent Star. A couple of things. One, the point that Mr. Harris raised about whether TJPDC intends to correct their mistakes. The email that I got from them yesterday says that we are currently reviewing the comments from Flavanna staff and hope to have any needed corrections from them very soon. We want to make sure that the equations are as accurate as possible. To me, that's a positive statement. It says that they actually intend to do what we would like for them to do. But there's something else that troubled me about the conversation I've just been listening to, and that is, I guess, Mr. Nichols' statement that you all have not looked at changing the assumptions at all. That is, the growth assumptions that are in that document that they gave to you, or in that spreadsheet model that they gave to you, have not been re-examined. And what they said to me yesterday in an email was, our deliverable to the county was the spreadsheet tool itself rather than an analysis of future development. The intent was to provide the county with a tool that allows them to enter their own assumptions so county officials could weigh different options and possibilities. In the submitted version, we included default assumptions from a previous study which looked at previous development trends in the Zion Crossroads area and along the I-64 corridor. While those default entries refer to previous work, we have had consistent message that the county should make its own assumptions. I'd like to see you make assumptions based on reality. Again, I challenge you to at the very least plug in the Walker's Ridge data to the spreadsheet that you have and see what happens with 120 homes a year and very little business and a lot of school kids, and how does it look then? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holden. Ms. Frank.
Steve had to adjust this before, so I'm going to make sure you don't have to walk over here, Mr. Nichols. Since I started out my public comments earlier requesting the staff version of the ROI, I'm glad to hear what I believe I heard was that we are going to see the staff analysis and findings, their take on the ROI. So I hope that we are going to see that it is going to be objective, that the facts will be allowed to go wherever they lead, that it will not be manipulated, and we will not get some sanitized version. I'm not questioning the staff and Mr. Nichols. I just want to be sure with everything that has transpired in the past week that we are actually going to get something that is above board. I also request that we get an unlocked version so that we can work the assumptions ourselves and see what happens, just as we have been able to with previous TJPDC ROIs. And I think Mr. Holder's point about the assumptions is very, very important. I sat here through the Zion presentation by the planning department, and I looked at those pictures, and I thought, isn't this strange? There's this big disconnect. We have these pictures of what we supposedly want there, and we have an ROI that's based on something else. That is where we look like we're not thinking. Just to take one example, the assumption in the ROI under the expected growth scenario for the TJPDC is for 20 residential units over the next 10 years. 20. That's it. In the Zion Crossroads community planning area. Walker's Ridge
is 1,180 residential units. And I was at the same meeting that Mr. Holder referred to previously, where Mr. Chester said, gosh, I wish Walker's Ridge were at Zion's Crossroads instead of here. 1,180 residential units, you would blow that ROI to bits. We are not, we've got this huge disconnect. We've got these numbers that are based on what? They're based on old growth scenarios. I mean, this is where we envision our, to be our primary growth area. If what we're doing is basing future growth on what we've had before rather than what we would get with water, well, that's crazy. I would like to see what would happen when you connect. You actually did an ROI based on those pictures, those pretty pictures we just saw. The other thing is I hope you will have a public hearing at the county courthouse. It is impossible to hear here. The acoustics are dreadful. Please, please, please. Thank you.
Hopefully that's because we're only using part of the fully functioning battle station here. But I mean, it's even worse for us because we can hear you speak, and then we hear the acoustics, and then we hear the echo as well. And
we can't hardly hear you. We can't hear each other.
So, in any event. Anybody else like to come up and not be heard by the Board of Supervisors? None? We'll go ahead and close that second round of public comment. You have anything? We're going to go ahead and enter into closed meeting and discuss personnel matters, investments of funds, and legal matters. Mr. Weaver?
Thank you.
Mr. Nichols?
Enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-37118.1, Section 2.2-37118.6 of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended, for the purpose of discussing personnel and investment of funds.
And legal matters?
I'm
sorry.
I don't have legal matters.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. The board will now enter closed session. That way. Stage left. I think.
Get on the next page here. Mr. Chairman, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session.
Sir, second.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Roll call votes required. Mr. Chester?
Yes.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mrs. Booker?
Yes.
Mr. Allenbrook?
Yes.
Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Mr. Weaver?
Be it resolved to the best of my knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Chesser. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Anything remaining for the good of the order? Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Chesser, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.